This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report, and today I'm talking to James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. James Evan Pilato, thank you very much for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
Hey man, thanks for asking me. I appreciate it.
No problem. Well, why don't you describe your site and your show for those who may not have heard or encountered it before?
MediaMonarchy.com started as a website that something, you know, initially I was just posting maybe a few times a week initially when I started, appropriately enough, on September 11th, 2005 is basically the official launch point for MediaMonarchy.com. And in the beginning, I didn't quite have a focus for it and found myself kind of floundering, and that's why I maybe didn't post very much to it. What happened was I actually moved from West Virginia to Oregon, and when I found myself in Oregon for a while without any friends so much and couldn't find work, I ended up spending a lot more time on the website. So being able to spend more time, of course, posted more to it, started to get more traffic, started to get more feedback. When I was able to get steady work, that's what let me start the radio show. I found myself, I couldn't really spend time volunteering, you know, at some of the local radio stations when I wasn't even making any money. But the moment I got a job, then I knew I could start doing a radio show. So I contacted a local, at the time, pirate radio station called the Portland Radio Authority. And they were initially doing an LPFM or low-power FM broadcast here in Portland, Oregon. They started to become more popular, and the Oregonian, the paper of record here in Oregon, wanted to do a story about them. And they said, yes, of course, you know, we'd love the attention, just don't say where we are. Of course, the interview and the article came out, and it more or less pinpointed where they were. A couple days later, the FCC showed up at their location with a cease and desist order. What happened then was they, of course, stopped the LPFM signal and just went online. At that point, a lot of people quit. And I think a lot of people quit either because it lost its outlaw appeal because it wasn't illegal anymore. And maybe a lot of people didn't want to do it if it was just on the internet. So that opened up a lot of slots at Portland Radio Authority. And I hopped right on and started to do my show in October of 2006. And now, coming up this weekend, will be episode 112. So it's all been done pretty much by myself. It's a one-man band. So I feel like it has been growing at just the right pace for me to be able to take care of it myself.
Excellent. Well, that's a very informative story in a number of different respects. But today on the Corbett Report, we're discussing the idea of the new media, which is obviously a term that's open to interpretation. But, of course, you use the term media in the name Media Monarchy, which I think is a great name, by the way. So why don't you tell us about the nature and the impetus behind using that name to describe what you're doing?
I have to give credit to my girlfriend. She coined the name Media Monarchy long before the website or the radio show were around. We were always, between my girlfriend and also friends that I used to play music with and do media with, we were always just kind of thinking of cool names, either for bands or for websites. So Media Monarchy was a name that I had just written down. And as the website sort of began, it just was this sort of light bulb about, oh, Media Monarchy would be a great name for this because it has monarchy with the sort of governmental control feel to it and media. So it's perhaps a kind of tongue-in-cheek title. You could think of Media Monarchy as a very bad thing, or you could look at a Media Monarchy as a great thing. I like to cite Jello Biafra, who's the ex-lead singer of the Dead Kennedys, who are a huge influence on me. He always said, don't hate the media, become the media. And I think that's been something that not only through the site, but through most of my life, I've tried to slowly get a handle on. So instead of hating the television and hating radio and hating all these things, what's happened in the last 10 plus years with technology is that we can become the media. And even within just the last few years with things like YouTube and podcasts and iTunes, you said it, I believe, on the previous episode, that we're living in one of the most amazing times in human history. We're literally living through another Gutenberg era where the sum of human knowledge is at our fingertips, and you just have to want to go dig into it.
Absolutely. There's no question that this is a revolutionary time period. And I like that Jello Biafra quote, and I might use it in the future. So thanks for giving it to me. Well, I locate the idea of the new media in the rise of an internet-based grassroots citizen journalism movement. And obviously, the internet is an integral part of what you're doing. But I'd like to get your thoughts on the significance of citizen journalism in general and how it's breaking up the monopoly of the corporate-controlled media.
Well, the first guys I would think of course, would be We Are Change and Luke Radowski. Now, initially, and even to this day, some of the videos I'm maybe not in love with. And again, of course, it's easy to play armchair quarterback and say, oh, they shouldn't have said that, or you should have done this instead. But you realize once you get in the ring yourself that it's not as easy as you maybe think it is. So seeing that first video from Luke Radowski where he goes in to talk to Brzezinski and says, how do we know that 9/11 wasn't staged by you and Rockefeller and the Trilaterals and the CFR and everybody, ooh, and they throw him out. He runs down the street and turns the camera to himself as he's finally gotten away and said, I just confronted Zbigniew Brzezinski. And that, I believe, was sort of the kickoff for We Are Change. So the idea now that someone with a, you know, $100 camera can go meet a high-up, whether it's someone in their local government or someone nationally or internationally known on a book tour, speaking tour, or what have you, that you can go get them, ask them pertinent, uncomfortable questions that the regular news media generally will not ask. And you can, it's, you know, some would say it's ambush journalism or it's gotcha journalism. But in a way, we have to do that now because the others aren't going to do it. It's going to be softball journalism. So you can get someone on the spot and ask them, hey, do you go to Bohemian Grove? Hey, do you, you know, Council on Foreign Relations? And ask them, you know, cutting pertinent questions. And you, a lot of times you can see the answer in their face rather than the things that they may say. Of course, if you remember the when Alex Jones talked to David Gergen outside the RNC a few years ago, and he got very angry when he started to talk about the mock druidic rituals that our supposed Christian leaders are involved in. So I love the fact that the average person, the average citizen, can confront anyone and post it online, and any number of millions of people can see it, and it can literally change things. We saw, again, Luke Radowski and I believe Sabrina, whose last name I don't recall, when they were able to confront Giuliani again and again and again and ask him questions. Of course, Giuliani lied about it, and I believe ABC News or possibly Associated Press had to look back and go, wait, they're right. You did say this to Peter Jennings. You did say you were warned the building was going to collapse. So we're able to, I think, call out the discrepancies or the lies in the mainstream media. Then it's all about spreading that out.
It certainly is. And I picked up on the exact same thing as you did regarding that Brzezinski confrontation by Luke Radowski. When I saw that for the first time, it's one of those feelings where you know that you're seeing something new, so the start of a new phenomenon. And there's no doubt that from that point on, the rules for journalism had changed slightly. And I'm also, of course, a big fan of what We Are Change is doing. And again, you're absolutely right. It's difficult to actually be in that position, although it's very easy to armchair quarterback. So my hat's off to everyone who's in the ring and confronting people and trying to bring the real questions to the politicians who are never asked those real questions by the corporate media. But what prompted you to get into this in the first place? Why did you want to start your website? Why did you want to start the show? And what kind of feedback have you had so far?
For now, the feedback has slowly been growing, and it has started to really amaze and impress me. But to maybe get at the start of all of it, I have to go back to the beginning for me and maybe give you a little bit of my life story. Growing up, I had a conservative upbringing, you know, Christian conservative upbringing, not strict by any means, but I was not allowed to go to the movies or to buy music, didn't have a radio or any of those things. And I believe that, you know, like anything with a kid, if you try and keep them away from it, it's going to be what they become more and more interested in. So anytime being younger, and of course these things slowly started to come into our life once VCRs became ubiquitous, the involvement with the church, with my family, and I grew up in the church. I went to Baptist church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night for just about 15 years. My dad was the choir director, which again, I think gives me an early start in music. And he was in a band back in his late 60s, early 70s days. So there was always the love of music around. When actually my dad left the church, that of course gives my brother and I the opportunity to say, well, if dad's not going to church, why do we have to go to church? Much to my mom's consternation. But once that sort of wall came down and I was allowed to go to the movies and then could listen to music, of course, some still with, you know, the parental guidance, there were definitely tapes that my mom got rid of and she heard them and said I couldn't listen to them. But it slowly started to grow and become more of an obsession, not in a bad way, I don't think. I started to spend a lot of time at record stores and video stores, not even necessarily buying lots of things, but studying the packaging, studying the credits. So I've always been really interested in, well, who produced that? What company distributed it? Who acted in that? And it wasn't long before I became sort of the go-to media guy. So with my friends, for the better part of my life, I've been that guy that people will either call up or find and say, settle a bet. Who's the guy that's in the thing? So I've always been that kind of, you know, go-to media guy. And then when I saw films like Pump Up the Volume with Christian Slater, which isn't a great film, but it had that element of becoming the media. He was a guy who moved from his hometown to a place where he didn't know anyone and started a pirate radio broadcast out of his basement bedroom. And he was able to expose the corruption of the new school that he went to and able to basically bring it down and cause the rise of all the other kids. So if you've seen the film, if you remember the end of the film when he finally does get arrested by the FCC, over the end credits you start to hear all the other people that he's influenced start to pick up the mic and say, hello, this is Susie. I'm broadcasting on 87.9. Can you hear me? And it ends the film with this, again, become the media. Whether you're talking to just a handful of friends or whether you can talk to hundreds or perhaps thousands of people, you're still getting your message out and asking questions that are to college. One of the main reasons I picked the school that I went to in West Virginia called Shepherd University, they had a 950-watt non-commercial FM radio station. So when I got there in 1995, when I started college, it's not that long that Nirvana and all these things had happened. I assumed I was going to get to the radio station, and it was going to be a hotbed, you know, of indie rock and alternative radio, and it wasn't. So I got there, and basically, post-Cobain, the bottom fell out of it. So when I get to the station, it's more or less a skeleton crew, and there aren't many people running it, just a handful of passionate people. I saw it, again, as something that, well, if you guys don't want to use a 950-watt FM station, I know I do. I started to DJ there from the very beginning in fall of 95. By late 99 or 2000, I became the music director or program director. That was basically picking the music and reviewing the music and contacting the record labels and getting new music, and was able to go to a lot of shows for free in Washington, D.C. and meet and interview bands from Death Cab for Cutie to Idlewild to Atari Teenage Riot and all kinds of bands. So I was involved in sort of the scene of music. That really kept me satisfied for a long time until 9/11. A few months after 9/11, again, being a lifelong media junkie, it was my own just curiosity that said, what's the video of the plane hitting the Pentagon look like? Because we had, of course, seen all the videos of the towers and all the other horrible things, and it was just in my own research. And again, it was around the same time that I finally had my own computer. So I was able late at night to start to look at things. But again, it was literally just that simple question of, what's the video of the plane hitting the Pentagon look like? And all you have to do is run that search for yourself and realize that, oh, we don't know what that looks like. And from that moment, it was pretty much down the rabbit hole. It became something that in town, where everyone again knew me as the radio guy, the media guy, the sound design guy, but beneath all of it was growing my own interest and curiosity and fear of what was going on in the world. Things didn't seem right. And again, I just to this day don't claim to know what happened on 9/11. All I know is that their official story can't possibly be true. So as I started to become more interested and more obsessed with, of course, it starts with 9/11 and it starts with the buildings. And yes, they look like controlled demolitions, but that can't be the end all be all. And you start to look at the other things. You start to look at the connections. You start to look at the Bush family. And then you started to look at, well, they're connected to the Clintons. And you start to look at this interchangeable elite that seems to come in and out of power every 4 or 8 years and slowly realizing that this isn't change, if I can jump us now to the present. So being in Shepherdstown and being the media guy, it was something, you know, 2002, 2003, 9/11 truth wasn't the most popular thing in the world, if we even have the term 9/11 truth for it then. I was just interested in ice in plain sight, which was, I believe, one of the first kind of, you know, 9/11 seemed a little dubious to me. The pods and all those sorts of things didn't really seem to make a whole lot of sense. It was only then in watching Alex Jones's 9/11 Road to Tyranny that you got the wide spectrum view. And of course, yes, it covered 9/11, but it covered the police state in general, and it of course covered the work he had been doing the previous 5 or however many years of whether it's people getting arrested. There's a clip in, this really hit home, there's a clip in Road to Tyranny, which of course is a massively long film, it's somewhere towards the end, where someone in West Virginia, I believe, gets pulled over, and they cover that story, and it just hit me that it is everywhere, and it is encroaching. But not being able to talk about those sorts of things in my college town, and again, yes, I could have talked about them, and I realize now that I probably should have more. I think I was just learning and figuring it out for myself. So I wasn't in a position to sort of go off half-cocked and start talking about these things to folks. It was in moving to Oregon in 2005, in late 2005, that I was able to sort of switch and push the sort of, you know, TV and music and film and media to the back burner in a way, and move the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups to the front. So in Portland, I've been able to push media monarchy to the front and do some of the music and other media things on the back burner. Does that make sense?
That really does. It was an excellent synopsis, and I'm glad you have been able to push media monarchy to the front, because I think it's a valuable resource for people to keep up with some of the corporate-controlled media news and some of the real news that's bubbling underneath all of that. And you did a pretty good job of making a synopsis of what's been going on the last several years, for sure. And I think we have pretty similar stories in a lot of ways, including, of course, Road to Tyranny being one of the films that really started to put 9/11 into a broader context for me, so I could understand what was happening at a societal level, not just on, of course, that one day. But for better or worse, I think I'll probably always think of Christian Slater when I'm listening to your podcast now, so that image has been firmly put in my mind. All right. Well, our connection is breaking up a little, so let's start to wrap this up a little bit. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how people can get in touch with you if they want to support your work or find out more about your website?
Well, again, let me thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. And the main site is mediamonarchy.com, and at the top right of the page will always be the latest podcast, but also the links to FaceSpace and YouTube and Yahoo and IM and Skype and Twitter and on and on. And those are the ways to get in touch with me, any number of ways. And I think that's really, again, the amazing thing about the new media is that, you know, untold numbers of people like me can and have, you know, gotten in touch with me, and I've gotten in touch with other people to help spread the word. So as an example, one last example, some of the pirate or low power FM radio stations that have picked up Media Monarchy, the podcast, like KBFR in Boulder, Colorado, they just started running the show on their own and told me about it later. And so I think it's viral and it's vital, and that's what I try and do with MediaMonarchy.com.
Well, it is important for us to stick together and support each other as the old media dies out and the new media rises to take its place. So, James Evan Pilato, my hat's off to you for getting out there and starting your website. And I'd like to thank you for being on the Corbett Report today and invite you back in the future to talk about current news.
Anytime, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.